Africa Climate Conversations, the podcast.
The area around Kenya's Lake Naivasha, including Kehotu, is considered part of the broader Lake Naivasha wetland ecosystem, as it is within its riparian land. On this episode, we'll look into the history of flooding in Lake Naivasha and how settlements like Kehotu came about, as well as why this wetland is of huge importance. But first, what are wetlands and why are they important? Hello, my name is Sophie Mbogwa and this is the Africa Climate Conversations. Wetlands are areas where the soil is saturated with water either permanently or seasonally and support specific vegetation. Some wetlands are just marshy, dominated by distinct grasses, reeds and other non-woody plants. An example is a wetland in the Nairobi-Runda area that is currently fenced. I'm not sure if someone has bought that land or not, along the northern bypass near a place called Githogoro, as you head towards where the bypass in Roiro to Roiro intersects with Kiambu Road. You will find a very, very beautiful wetland fenced off there on your left, and in part of it, you can see a school and a mosque built on it. There are also boggy wetlands or bogs like the Ondere wetland, located in Kikuyu, Kiambu County, about 30 meters from Nairobi CBD. You see, at Ondere, when you walk on it, it has a carpet-like layer that shakes, protecting you from the water or the peat below it, and also has a distinct kind of vegetation. Then we have swamps or wet woodlands. These are forested wetlands. Trees or tall shrubs dominate these wetlands. But the main thing is that those trees or shrubs will be standing on water for most part of the year. Mangrove swamps and salt marshes are perfect examples here. Also, this is the kind of wetland you'll find in Lake Naivasha riparian area. Now, in grasslands, you'll find wet grasslands. These are open areas with seasonal flooding. They are covered in water-tolerant grasses, wildflowers, sedges. Now, for those of you who speak Kikuyu, you must know of ngoda, a type of grass we used to weave some ropes with it. It is an example of sedge grass. I think they're also called kogon grasses. Now, often, these grasses are very, very difficult to uproot. Now, back to Lake Naivasha. This is a freshwater lake located in southern Rift Valley, about 80 kilometers from Nairobi, Kenya's capital center. Its water has been on the rise, just like other Eastern Rift Valley lakes, such as Baringo, Solai, Bogoria, Elementaita, Turkana, Nakuru. But we'll delve a little bit deeper into the water level history in a few. Now, Lake Naivasha was designated a Ramsar site in 1995. It was recognized as a wetland of international importance. But why is Kehotu part of the Lake Naivasha wetland? Yes, lakes and riverbanks are considered wetlands because they are areas that are seasonally or permanent flooded and support specific vegetation. Now, for those in Kenya, if you've ever driven on the Mai Mahiu Road to Naivasha just after the South Lake Road that provides access to numerous resorts, camps and attractions like Hell's Gate National Park, just next to it there is this place with some yellow-backed acacia trees, and you rarely miss zebras and giraffes there. This acacia tree is called the yellow fever tree, the primary woody vegetation within the Lake Naivasha riparian. These trees thrive in swampy areas as well as on riverbanks, floodplains, and other low-lying areas with a very high water table. When you look at other lakes and forested areas around the lake, you'll find similar trees. One of the lakes is Lake Olaiden. Now, this is a smaller alkaline volcanic crater lake located on the south end of Lake Naivasha, also surrounded by yellow fever acacia trees. This was a lake that used to host an impressive flock of flamingos due to its level of salinity, but due to rising water levels, it turned into a freshwater lake. Mostly, you'll find now freshwater birds such as the pelicans and other African fish eagles. The other lake is Lake Sonachi, or the Green Crater Lake, a small saline alkaline lake located within a dramatic volcanic crater southwest of Lake Naivasha. Now, Lake Sonachi is located within a privately owned game sanctuary. It has dense patches of riparian acacia forest, with the yellow fever acacia trees being the most notable species you will see. Why are all these important? Many lakes that are formed within a river valley and are naturally connected to the river's flow naturally flood when the parent river floods its bank. This means the land adjacent to it would be flat and hence a floodplain to allow flooding, that rising and falling of the water level. Lake Naivasha is fed by two main river systems, the Malewa River contributing 80% and emanating from the Nyandarua Mountain, also known as the Aberdare Ranges in central Kenya, and the Gilgil contributing 10%. But on the southern part, we have several other streams draining into the lake, such as Karate, Nyamivi, and Kwamoya. Now, the lake itself doesn't have a visible surface outlet, but its fresh water status is maintained by underground outflow and natural sedimentation. Now, when you look at Kihoto, it's a flat area next to the lake. Ideally, this is to allow that natural flow of water that allows a host of other biodiversity to thrive. These acacia trees, among other trees, and some grasses would grow here. Ideally, these are the areas you'd find wildlife. Apart from the papyrus reeds populated by hippos and a host of different species of birds, this swampy woodlands was home to wildlife species such as waterbucks, giraffes, zebras, antelopes, buffaloes, bushbirds, and many other creatures. Now, God, in his infinite wisdom, ensures balance in everything. These wild animals, whether they are hippos that live in water, they come out of the waters at night to feed and also get some rest. This is where they are supposed to go. Not all birds nest on the reeds. Some birds, like the pied-avocet, among the 400 bird species that call Lake Naivasha home, nest on the ground, typically in shallow scraps of mudflats or small islands with wetlands. Such birds would nest here. These other large mammals would rest here too. Given they used to roam distances, it was also the ideal area to give birth, feed, and lounge. This is one of the things that makes wetlands very important. Remember, the lake ecosystem does not exist on its own. When we develop, we never consider wildlife migration patterns. Near Lake Naivasha, there is Eburu Forest, there is Mau Complex, and there is the vast riparian area that is populated with trees. Hence, wild animals in their free movement had to access the fresh waters of the Lake Naivasha and its riparian land. Now, apart from providing habitat for a diverse area of species, the Lake Naivasha wetland area is very important. The soil in this area is very permeable, making it easy for water to penetrate and seep into the ground, underground aquifers recharging them. Now, with this freshwater resource located in a water-scarce area, the wetland is a lifeline support for communities, horticulture, hotels, a diverse of community of water birds, and many large mammals requiring fresh water to survive. Now, let's talk about the water level history of Lake Naivasha. Back in 1990, David Harper, Kenneth Mavuti, and Mushai Mushiri wrote this paper on the ecology and management of Lake Naivasha in relation to climatic change. They noted that according to Maasai oral history, there was a period immediately before the arrival of the first European when the lake was completely dry. They go ahead to say that the evidence from cave excavation to the south of Lake Elementaita, also from lavering of ancient shorelines, and from examinations of cores from the deepest part of the lake, indicated that a much larger lake existed around 10,000 to 12,000 years before 1950. The lake water levels at that time was about 40 meters higher than in 1950 levels. This is because the climate of the Rift Valley then was far much wetter. Those high lake levels were maintained for several thousand years to about 5,700 years before 1950. Then, for the next 1,500 years, the lake levels fell to approximately 1950 levels, then dried out for a short period of perhaps not more than 100 years, at around 3,000 years before 1950. Their research indicates that the lake's level must have been rising between the years 1880 and 1895 to a maximum height of 1,896 meters above the sea level. The lake levels then declined during a drought that lasted for about approximately 4 years at the turn of the century. Now, in 1908, continuous recording commenced at 1890 meters above sea level. A general decline to a low point in the decade 1945 to 1955 is then recorded. Then, a rapid increase in 1961 to 1963, a level retained for about 10 years, but followed by a decline of 2 to 3 meters in the early 1970s. An increase occurred thereafter over the last 4 years of that decade, and by late 1982, the level had exceeded 1,887 meters, where it remained for about a year. Now, since early 1984, the level fell steadily, and in January 1988, it was about 5 meters below the 1983 peak, having come to its lowest level in this century. At this time, between 1983 and 1985, Kenya, along with most of East African countries, experienced a severe drought. By 1987, the lake had returned to levels similar to those experienced in the 1950s. But the onset of the long rains in April 1988 brought an end to the decline, to this decline, at least for the time being. Now, a 2022 report on water level fluctuations and fish yield variation in Lake Naivasha by George Morara and others shows that between 1980 and 2019, annual water levels in Lake Naivasha rose between a minimum and a maximum of 4.2 meters. The highest lake level of 1889.8 meters above sea level recorded in 1982, while the lowest of 1,885.6 meters was recorded in 2009. Between 1980 and 2010, lake water levels went down except in 1998. When a phenomenal water level rise was recorded. If you remember, in 1997 and 1998, Kenya experienced exceptionally heavy rains associated with the El Nino phenomenon. But from 2010 to 2019, waters has been on a steady rise. They say the lake has maintained higher water level conditions of above 1,888 meters above sea level from 2012 to 2019. Until now, the water level has not started to decline. Now, if we look back at HAPA and others' research, the lake had recorded higher water levels than in 2019, that of 1,896 meters between the year 1880 and 1895. Is the lake likely to keep rising to these levels? Now, if you look at the most climatic predictions model for East Africa, they project much higher rainfall in the future as compared to the Southern African region that is projected to be drier. Now, this means that we are likely to see a continued water level rising trajectory of Lake Naivasha, Turkana, Salai, Elementaita, Nakuru, Baringo, and other Rift Valley lakes. Now, this means the settlements like Kihoto and the hotels around these lakes have to rethink. But how did settlements such as Kihoto find its way here? Now, to protect the riparian land from degradation, the colonial settlers did not allow constructions of permanent structures. The settlers kept large cattle ranches, which occupied the bottom of the Rift Valley. But to the south of Lake Naivasha, there was a large size of plantation, and these settlers would grow vegetables and fodders, which they irrigated using the lake water. But what changed the rule of the game was when one vegetable grower in the early 1980s decided to switch the production of cut flowers for export around the shores of the lake. In the late 1990s, this flower farm started to mushroom to now over 60 flower farms on the lakeside. Not only are the flowers grown on the lakeside, but also vegetables for export. Now, this horticulture development brought a shift in the land ownership and population around the lake. Since the 1980s, entrepreneurs moved in, bought or rented land, and started growing commercial flowers for export. Demand follows supply, right? Now, these flower farms needed workers who also needed shelters. The population around Lake Naivasha tremendously increased, resulting in a rising of upland settlement, which lacked basic amenities such as water, sanitation, and waste disposable programs. Now, while the numbers of unplanned settlements increased, also the numbers of hotels, lodges, camps, but directly built directly on the lake shores, grew tremendously, attracted by the serenity the lake offered. Naivasha is home to 7 out of every 10 flower farms in Kenya. A 2021 Central Bank of Kenya Monetary Policy Committee report shows that 100,000 people are directly employed in flower farms. The flower farm industry is estimated to employ over 1 million people in Kenya. This would mean about 70,000 people in Kenya are directly employed by flower farms in Naivasha, while about 350,000 are employed around Naivasha flower farms, according to the CBK data. Now, cut flower exports earned Kenya about 72 million shillings in 2024, according to the Kenya National Bureau of Statistics. Now, the challenge for the riparian land comes in here. We already talked about the historical rise and fall of Lake Naivasha waters. When the lake recedes for a long time, such spaces are seen as idle spaces and hence land available for sale and construction to house the high number of people needed to work on these flower farms and vegetable farms, lodges and hotels around the lake. Now, the other challenges is that of deforestation. As these fever trees were cleared for charcoal and wood, the area was converted to riparian cultivation, grasslands for intensive livestock management, irrigated production of horticulture crops, settlements, as well as tourist establishment. Not to mention pollution from agrochemicals, from the horticulture industry, raw sewerage, be it from unplanned settlements, but also hotels, lodges, and camps that not only impact the lake water levels, but also the underground, the groundwater. Poaching of bushmeat as well as increased water obstruction, be it from the rivers emptying into Lake Naivasha or the lake itself and underground water, as more horticulture farming comes up both upstream and around in the lake shores. Now, in conclusion, we can blame climate change as for the floods as much as we want, but there is a need to take responsibility when we go wrong as humans. These lakes are just undergoing their normal breathing, as data has evidently shown. But humans are on the way. Nature will always recover its territory. The truth is, no scientific evidence can understand or give true evidence of the real why as to the reasons that these Great Lakes have been flooding and receding, because man cannot truly understand nature. Because to me, nature is God. We can observe during high rainfall and drought seasons, the lake level rises and falls. We can study underground activities and caves, but we cannot truly understand the reason why. But what we can do is respect the boundaries of such water bodies like Lake Naivasha and the riparian wetland areas. There are activities we can do, such as livestock farming, that do not change the land use change, but allow the lakes to naturally rise and fall as they were intended without effect. But building permanent structures changes the land use of these wetlands, affecting not just the biodiversity, but also economies, as we can see today. Nature will always find a way to push humans out of its territory, no matter how long it takes. Thank you so much for listening. My name is Sophie Mbogwa.
Africa Climate Conversations. The podcast.